should be loading. As Dan mentioned, Dick Axtell has a real contagious passion for integrated pest management, and I've had the distinct privilege of working with Dick for a total of 7 years. I worked with him for 3 years as my PhD program, working on mosquito production from animal waste lagoons, and then I spent 2 years working with him on fly management, essentially using a bio-based system, looking at parasitoids and their value as a fly management tool. And that's essentially what I'd like to tell you about today, is that the work that I learned and the information that I was able to gather while working with Dick, the influence that this has had on me in using parasitoids in fly IPM programs. So when I got to New York State, in New York, in spite of what you might think grows things other than very tall buildings and lots of blacktop and macadam, it is ranked third in the nation in milk production. So it was obvious when I got to Cornell, and it was at the directive of our dean, that Don, with all the work that you did in North Carolina on poultry, you will now be working on dairy in New York State, which is essentially, you know, what we had done. And at that point in time, there was very, very little work that was done on dairies using parasitoids. The work that was done up to that point in time was done by Patterson and Morgan down in Florida, and they were doing it primarily on poultry. Dick and I had been doing that work in North Carolina. Fred Legner had undoubtedly been doing a lot of work in California. And Jim Peterson was just getting started on using parasitoids and looking at the impact of parasitoids on flies out in Nebraska. The work that I'm going to tell you about, I'm going to tell you about the story as to how this bio-based IPM program, we developed it in New York, and essentially from the beginning to where it is today. And I'm humbled by the fact that it's quite a success story, and I continue to hear comments back and compliments back as to how effective it is out there on our dairy farms in New York. But what I've got to say is the fact that these people, Chris Geddon, we've already heard these names already, Chris Geddon, Don Steinkraus, Keith Waldron, who's with our New York State IPM program, has worked considerably in all of these areas. Wes Watson was also a research associate with me, as was Phil Kaufman. So essentially the work that we're going to be talking about here over the next few minutes is the majority of their work, and I was really pleased to have them as associates throughout my time that I've been at Cornell. When we talk about Dick's legacy, one of the two things that I think really points out the impact that Dr. Axtell has had, you know, on parasitoids and biological control are these two books that Dick Patterson and I served as editors for, and Dick's had a number of chapters in these. And the interesting thing that I did the other day was just merely look through that and look at the other presentations and see the large number of presentations that are in there, or chapters that are in there, that have actually referenced Dick's work throughout both of these books. Tell you a little bit about the problem. When you consider a state like New York, it's a real urban state. There's a real issue at that ag-urban interface, and it ends up being really bad publicity. This on the right-hand side was during the time that Phil Kaufman was with us. So you see how effective Phil, this is one of our research farms too, unfortunately. But this is in the New York Times, and it talks about the town watched the skies for an invasion of flies. It's a public health problem. In the state of New York, flies do not fall under the right to farm law, so it's a public health threat. And neighborhood relations and litigation, as all of you are quite familiar with. So it's a very, very severe problem. One of the things that we knew early on in the beginning of this work is that there was a tremendous amount of resistance to the insecticides that were being used for fly management, and that we really need to be developing alternatives to those insecticides. We found that house flies and stable flies were highly resistant to most insecticides, and that fewer and fewer of these insecticides were being registered for livestock use. Very few chemistries were on the horizon. And the Food Quality Protection Act which we didn't know about at the time early on, but which hit us in the mid-90s, really impacted us as well. Looking at the change in permethrin resistance, before I got there, Ed Schmittman was already looking at permethrin resistance, the use of Ectoban, Atroban, and others, and it was a product that was very effective when it was initially used, and unfortunately it was abused. And essentially what you have here is the 1987. You can see this is 1x, this is the labeled rate. We were getting, this is percent survival, we were getting up, you know, essentially up to about a 60% survival on these various farms. In 1999, even at the 10x rate, we were getting between 40 and 60% survival. That's 10 times the label rate. So we were really seeing an increase, you know, in insecticide resistance. Resistance was highest with the, you know, tetrachlorvinfos, permethrin, and cyfluthrin. And the interesting thing was that we found similar levels of resistance essentially at all dairies. So it didn't matter if it was an organic dairy, they had similar levels of resistance because of the movement of the flies to and from those farms. FQPA, this hit us in the mid-90s, and as I've already mentioned, we already had few pesticides available for our use, and the FQPA is leaving us even with fewer pesticides. And housefly resistance essentially is exceptionally high, which is now mandating that, you know, these problems demand a cost-effective integrated approach, a bio-based approach. And that's what I'd like to quickly talk about here over the next few minutes. The fly parasitoid research that we were involved in the department essentially involved the surveys, looking at what we were finding out there, the microhabitat preferences, what were the species, where were they on those farms? Susceptibility to insecticides. What impact were insecticides having on those biological control agents? Colony disease management, releases and IPM programs, and then we took this to the field statewide. And then the fine tuning of the parasitoid releases is where we are today. So I'd like to just briefly touch on each and every one of these. When we look at the fly pupal parasitoids that we found in New York, very, very similar to what we found in North Carolina in our poultry operations, with few exceptions. Mesutophrax raptor, Eurylepis rufipes, Pachycopoides vindemii, Nasonia, three species of Spalangia, Trichomelopsis, Diabrachus cavus, and Anichnemata. So we found essentially 11 different species of parasitoids that were active out there on our dairy farms in New York. When we looked at the relative abundance of these parasitoids, we found, and we did these surveys over a number of years, 83, 85, and 87, we found that Mesutophrax raptor was indeed the predominant species that we were finding out there, and then there were two other species that were quite active, Spalangia cameroni and Eurylepis rufipes. Now, Eurylepis rufipes was a new parasitoid species that had never been found on dairies or found as a parasitoid of flies in the United States, and interestingly enough, at the same time that we were preparing this publication describing Eurylepis, Jim Peterson was also doing the same thing in Nebraska. So this was a new species that we were finding out there in good numbers. And then the other species were considerably less. We looked at microhabitat preferences, and this was a work of Link Smith on our dairies in New York State. And essentially, when we're looking at outdoor shelter and indoors in New York, we have our barns, our conventional freestall and stanchion barns, which we'd consider to be the indoor habitats. And then the outdoor habitats would be like our calf hutches or our calf coveralls, which are becoming more and more prevalent in New York State at this point in time. So this is Spalangia cameroni. When we looked at M. raptor, we found that M. raptor was essentially prevalent throughout all of those microhabitats that flies were being found in. So we decided that Mesutophrax raptor would indeed be our candidate of choice to be using for fly biological control. And the other thing that pushed us in that direction was the fact that we found that Mesutophrax raptor was active throughout the entire fly season in New York. It was active through May, from May through September. So it was not only throughout all of the fly breeding habitats, it was also prevalent throughout the fly breeding season. We also looked, and Chris Geddon was actively involved in this, the mortality of housefly parasitoids after exposure to the field rates of insecticides, common insecticides. And we looked at the three predominant species that we were finding there on those dairies, the raptor, Cameron eye, and rufapes. And you see that, you know, many of these products that were out there that were being used on a, you know, on a regular basis were quite devastating to the various species of parasitoids. There were some neat differences. One of the things that we found down here was that M. raptor for the natural pyrethrins pyrenone, essentially the mortality was quite low for that in comparison to the other species. One of the other things that Chris noticed that when we get started in this and we were looking to mass rear M. raptor for releases in our programs, we noticed that we were having a problem with longevity of our colonies as well as a problem with fecundity. And there was a microsporidian disease that Chris discovered. And essentially we found it in all of our colonies that we had in New York. And even from the standpoint of the wild generations here, we have 35% of them was the percent infected. And this is a Mesitophorax raptor. When we looked at Raptorellis from Chile and Peru that were in colony for over 5 years, those were not infected, nor were Mesitophorax uniraptor. When we looked at M. raptor from Minnesota, again, high levels of infection, and from an insectary, also high levels of infection. The only other species that we found this microsporidiosis in was in Mesitophorax zauraptor. And I've already mentioned that this particular disease had an impact not only on the longevity but on the progeny production. You look at the wild, the longevity in days that were infected was 9. It was essentially half of what we were seeing in the uninfected. And then the 70 generations in the lab, it essentially was merely a third, lived only a third as long as the uninfected. And then down at the bottom, with the wild, we had about half of the progeny production and only 25 as compared to 223 with 70 generations in the lab. So this disease did have a tremendous impact on the colonies, and Chris developed essentially a program we could actually clean up these colonies using a heat treatment of the parasitized pupae. Uh-oh. I guess that's not going to show in this. Effect on using an IPM approach to manage fly populations, and it's unfortunate that this isn't going to show, because what this is essentially the work that we had done in New York and the work that Dick Miller had done at the USDA lab down in Gainesville, and this was through a USDA grant, and this involved the releases of M. raptor, judicious use of insecticides and other IPM practices. And essentially what we were able to show was that we were able to keep both on our farms in New York, on our control and our treatment farms in New York, and our control and treatment farms in Maryland, we were able to keep the five fly populations below the action thresholds. And this gives a summary of that study. And it's that when we looked at the relative efficacy and costs of conventional and bio-based fly management programs, and this information was key to gaining the acceptance of the dairy farmers in New York State. We showed them the economics that using these parasitoids, one, was effective, and two, it was cost effective. And looking at the conventional and the bio-based, these are spots per card. We got on average 149 throughout the fly season as opposed to 72. We used an action threshold of 100. So we wanted to keep that population level down. So we were maintaining a fly population level at half of what was going on at conventional farms. Number of insecticide applications, 15 as opposed to 3. The cost of the insecticide, cost of parasitoids. So essentially, through this program, we were able to bring about a 50% reduction in flies on our farms in both New York and in Maryland. We were able to do this with a reduction, an 80% reduction in pesticide use, and we were actually able to do it at a cost that was less than that was being used on the conventional farms. We then took this information out across New York State, and this was conducted on 98 dairy farms in 25 New York counties during 92, 93, and 94. And throughout this time, the dairy farmers were being sensitized to the need and relative value of an integrated fly management approach instead of relying primarily on insecticide usage, because they were seeing that the pesticides that they were using were no longer providing the control that they were hoping for. This awareness of the process, the risk of fly resistance, you know, was significantly enhanced. So they were really seeing what was happening out there. And they learned the true value of integrating this, the cultural, the sanitation. And that's another part of this that I didn't mention today, but we actually did a study. We were working with an ag economist there at Cornell, Bill Lazarus, where we did an economic study on manure management. We continue to talk about, you know, that manure management is indeed the cornerstone to fly control, you know, on our farms. And we really put some economics to that so farmers would know the dollar value of what we were asking them to do. And we found out that, again, it became a very economical thing to do and a very effective thing to do. The biological, the preservation of the native species and the parasitoid releases. And it's really interesting today to get out there on the farms and to see what people are doing and how they're doing it and how they feel about what they see the results are of what they're doing. Now, of course, the mechanical traps, tapes, and ribbons with the judicious use of pesticides. And at this point in time, we're recommending that if people feel that they do indeed need to use pesticides, that they use the natural pyrethrins. And I think we're going to be coming up quite close. This is the last slide that I have. And this is where we are today with this. This is a study that we've just completed. It was a 3-year study, and this is the last year of the data. This is a where we had used M. raptorellus releases. Essentially, this is percent mortality. We're looking at the M, let me see if we can get this. M. raptorellus releases here, as opposed to the M. raptor, M. raptorellus releases here, as opposed to the no release. This is essentially percent fly mortality. So we were getting right around between 80 and 95% fly mortality, you know, essentially throughout the fly season with these releases. And interestingly enough, this year we were doing a different study on these farms, and we found that unfortunately the study that we were doing did not provide effective control of flies. And essentially at the end of the season, when I got to meet with the dairy farmers, they asked if in fact they could go back to the program that we were using there the year before, because it was absolutely amazing to see the difference in fly numbers that we had essentially from when we were using the bio-based program to essentially where we were today, where we weren't able to use it. It's interesting also, and I'll close with a couple of comments, that one of the things that's interesting that we're finding today is when we go out into throughout New York State to try to find farms on which to do research with biological control agents, a number of the farmers are already using them, so they're very happy to have us not be there, or to have us come there such that they do not have to go out and purchase the parasitoids, because they have worked so well. And one of the things that happened to me this past summer, I was at a meeting in a totally different commodity, and one of our senators, who was the chair of the Senate Ag Committee in the state of New York, we chatted a little bit at the beginning of the meeting and chatted about the various things that I had been doing. So at the end of the meeting, she came up to me and she asked me if, in fact, the work, the program, the fly management program that she had been using on their family farm, if in fact it was the program that had been developed at Cornell through my program. And she had been so thrilled with that. So it was very pleasing to hear. And I will say that the reports that we're getting back from our dairy farmers, they're very pleased with this. And they're essentially using it because of the fact that we really have, one, it's effective, two, it's cost effective. And lastly, they're finding that the resistance, fly resistance, to the various insecticides that we have out there essentially is very, very high. So that's the story of what we had been doing in developing the bio-based program for fly IPM. And it really is, you know, it all stemmed from those 2 years that I spent with Dick Exdell. And Dick, I thank you for that. Okay, we have...